You see both.
I think I'm expecting one more to come.
Okay.
Yeah. But
yes, how was your trip?
How was your trip in Egypt?
Yeah, I was there, 2 weeks ago. I didn't go to the pyramids, so that's just the reminder.
Just like
but yeah, that was a week with the dolphins in the Red Sea.
Oh, yeah. I bet it was.
Great.
Did you have communication with them?
Well, they're just so present. Yeah, I mean, it's not a verbal or even mental communication. It's more of a soul communication.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, any friendship with any animal, you begin to relate on a level of deeper soul connection. And then it's like you just enhance each other's skills and, you know, whatever. So what we ended up doing is swimming with them several times a day. And then in the evenings, I gathered together to do some meditations and sharing. And, you know, in that, just experiencing this great expansion because of this shared connection with the dolphins.
Yeah.
And together, the connection with the earth is enhanced.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to come next year, I'll be going in
we'd love
September.
To.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So Egypt is a good place for dolphins?
Well, there's this one place in the Red Sea. So it's a coral reef offshore. And it's you know, surrounded by coral, so it's a protected area. And dolphins usually go out at night to hunt, and then they come into this reef to rest. And that's where you can interact with them.
Oh, wow. That sounds amazing.
Wonderful opportunity. Yeah.
Do you have any photos? Do you have anything to show us?
Well, if you go to YouTube, I've put up several videos. So,
okay.
Here, I'll write down the name of the series.
Well, the ocean must be beautiful there, right?
It is. Oh, but it's absolutely beautiful.
Ooh.
Yeah. So then it's dolphins in Tsataya Bay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Ah,
I think there's maybe 12, 12 videos that I've put up there.
Wow.
So.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah, something you can't forget that stays with you, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, over the years, I've been going once a year. So then you build a personal relationship with them. And then when you're there, they remember you. They come up just like any animal, you know, dog or, you know, lion or whatever. They remember you. So it's like gradually every year, it's a deeper kind of relationship.
Oh, what a friendship.
Yeah.
Very, very sacred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, there is Lilo. Lilo is here.
Oh, good.
Okay. Yeah, so great. I think this is the number they. Hi there.
Hi.
So nice to receive you as well.
Okay, I'm going to have to check my video setting again. Cannot start video. Okay. Always something.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Oh, Kiara is gone.
Yep.
That's so
true.
Okay. Come on. I'm out in the snow with my laptop, so I have to change the setting.
Oh.
Good morning, everyone.
So, yeah, welcome. Good to see you.
Great to have you. I have been reading your book, Kiara, on that Isa.
Ah, okay.
Ah, it's so beautiful. I mean, your writing, it's so poetic. It's so beautiful, just drawn into that.
Yeah, thanks. And Mark, thank you for your editing as well.
Oh, you're welcome, yeah.
Yeah.
I downloaded to Kindle two of your other books, the Gaia Luminous, and how is that pronounced? Ilahinur?
Ilahinur.
Say that again?
Ilahinur.
Ilahinur.
Yeah, okay. Ilahi is divine, Nur is light.
Okay.
Turkish, Arabic.
Yeah. Looking forward to reading those.
Yeah,
you're a good writer.
he's really good writer.
Thank you. I enjoy it. Yeah, that's one of my gifts. I really enjoy it and just feel such a, you know, when the flow is there, it's so much fun. It's like,
the English is your main language?
Yeah.
Okay. Because your English is really beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks.
But you were born in India, no?
Yeah.
You always write in English.
English is the main language in India. Mm. There's regional languages, there's Hindi as the national language. But for educational purposes, it's always English. People speak, you know, 3-4 different languages.
Yeah.
Usually. Which is also true in Europe.
Yeah.
I think the US is one of the few countries where people don't speak a number of languages. So.
Yeah, but it's not the same, no, to speak and to write. I mean, your writing, it's so flowing. Like,
I've always loved writing. Yeah. And it's like, you know, when you're in that mode, it's like someone else comes and speaks through you.
Yes, like channel.
Channel. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I feel so expanded and open when I'm in that mode and just able to connect. So when I'm in that flow of writing, I usually, you know, I wake up early mornings, I start writing, and then I go for a walk, and then more inspiration comes during that time, and then I go back, and then maybe grab a bite, and then I'm back to writing, and it's like, can't hardly wait to go back into it. So now I'm working on the sequel. It's going to be a trilogy.
Oh, good. So, hey.
Yeah, so next month I'll be actually taking a course in Kundalini Tantra Yoga, which is like the heart of Kashmir Shaivism, which is what Isa was actually exploring. Then, which later became known as Kashmir Shaivism. But in his time, it was simply, you know, the path of divine union. And so that's where those teachings actually emerge from. So as I'm writing, it's like more, you know, information is coming through. Some of it is, of course, historical, but a lot of it just comes through in the process of putting it together.
Do you feel like you're channeling, Isa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever channeling means.
Well, yeah, coming through from the other side of the veil. Yeah.
I mean, I think we're all channeling all the time. It's just who are we channeling from, what dimension? Because, you know, the personal self doesn't, the personal self is, exists to logically organize information, but where that information comes from, it's like, you know, you're turning the radio frequency to a certain band or another band. And the mind is like that radio. It's not the source of information, but it receives it from wherever you're tuning into.
Right.
So
I once took a course, a weekend course, write your book in a weekend. And there I learned how to disengage the left side of my brain and just let it flow. And me being very cautious, you know. But once I broke through, it is unbelievable how things just flow. You have no idea what came out. And of course, it needs editing, but it's really good to just let it flow.
How did you do that? How to stop the left brain? I'm just curious.
Well, it was a class that I took in Sedona, and I was curious because write a book in a weekend, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So he had he put us into an altered state and taught us how to disengage the left side of our brain and just to start writing. I was typing at my laptop. And my book was, it turned out to be a children's book, sort of a young, older children's book. And it started with a man walked through soot-filled roads on a cold December morning. I said, oh yeah, where did that come from? But it ended up using information that I'm interested in, like eating meat or not, and the treatment of animals. And so that kind of came through that weekend. And I saw that there were a group of beings or guides or friends or whatever, I've seen them before, but they were the ones that were helping me bring it through. Mm. And I'm just not, I'm a reluctant or lazy or whatever, but I don't connect them enough. Mm. But I know that if I do, because they are so eager to work with me, that a lot of stuff will come through, you know. And I mean, they are connected to others. And I think we have to do that at this time, because the information needs to come. Mm. But personally, you know, I have sort of a bias against the term channeling, because a lot of people channel and it turns me off, to tell you the truth. Mm. The way they talk, the way they change, and the authority. You never know who is really talking, you know. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, if you're trying to do it, often you're connecting with spirits who inhabit the astral worlds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have something to say, no doubt, but it may not be necessarily the highest expression.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it all depends on what frequency, and it depends on your own clarity.
Yeah.
So if you're stepping out of the way, if there's not much ego in the way, then you can actually open to other sources. And it's all through the higher self anyway. And what is the higher self? It's not a personal self.
No.
It's a integrated divinity that exists through all things and all realms, in all beings. So it's just the linear idea that we have that this is, you know, somehow separate and individual self. So writing or painting or, you know, any of these creative modes is such a beautiful way to slip out of this identity. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's like you're open to this great big wind.
You know, ever since I was a child, even when I was really young, I experienced myself like almost like I was in a tube. And I was looking out through two holes onto the world around me. And ever since I've always said, why am I me? Why is my consciousness, why is it separate? Why am I me? And I still don't know why I'm me. It's like one time I experienced myself as a point of consciousness in where there was no form, communicating with another point of consciousness, and it was like without words, ideas came across, and still there I still was one individual point of consciousness that was definitely me. You know, but
well, there you go, that's the first line of your next book.
Oh, that's interesting. I should do that because then I'd get more. Wow, I never thought of that. Yes.
You know, that's the secret of writing for me. It's there's always the first line that comes through. It's not something you think about. And then once that first line is there, then everything else comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing when you're speaking. You know, like if I'm giving a talk, I connect with the group energy and then wait for the first line to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And then it may take a few seconds, a few minutes even. But then once that happens, it's like the flow is endless.
Yeah.
Well, so there I'm you go.
Yeah, excellent. Now I'm going to write that down. Good idea. Good.
Do you have a kind of routine way to meditate yourself, Kiala?
I am undisciplined, but I'm making my life a meditation, sort of. But I bought a Kindle book that talks about attention span and the lack of it, which I noticed I've had in these last few years. And he actually researched what is causing the lack of attention span in people in general, and that there is a concerted effort to create that on every continent. I never thought about that. So I'm going to finish reading that book, and he finds ways to stop it, because I have a memory of when I was up until I was 23 or 24, when I got out into the world, I was able to concentrate on a single point for as long as I wanted to. I know I did, but I lost it, you know? And I mean, I didn't lose it. It's still somewhere, but I haven't been able to use it.
So. Well, you know, your writing is probably a meditation.
Mm-hmm.
When you tune into that flow, it's true for me. When I write, I find myself actually tuning into a space above my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a very strong vibrational buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And then the words come from there.
Yeah.
So, you know, most people think about meditation as something where you're freezing your mind or losing your mind or stopping the mind, but it's not that so much, because there's many levels of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You're simply attuning to a higher level of the mind, and then the rational mind starts to become a vehicle, just a vehicle rather than an instigator.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that makes
and so
sense.
Then, like you're saying, also everything becomes a meditation. Awareness is the meditation.
Yeah.
This, you know, your body becomes a meditation. You become aware of sensations. You become aware of feelings. You become aware of, you know, thoughts as they pass. But you're not trying to do anything. You're not trying to stop the mind or the ego or get rid of the ego, as many people talk about. Why?
Yeah.
What's the point? We are here to express this.
That's exactly
unity consciousness through the personal ego rather than identify with the personal ego. So when we make that distinction, it's, you know, we can embrace it all. There's no resistance.
Tasting each moment, no? It's like really focusing on a tasting or enjoying that 100% be inside of the body and then feeling that. And not be there and there.
You know, right. I in 1980 I studied the Course in Miracles, and the Course in Miracles was very, very big on killing the ego. And even then, you know, I said, no, thank you. My ego doesn't want to be killed. Mm-hmm. And along the line, I made a pact with my ego. I said, okay, you can be with me, but one thing you have to accept, that you have to go along with my growth. You cannot stop it. You know, if you are willing to grow together with me, then we'll do it together. Mm-hmm. And somehow for me, it worked, you know.
Yeah, that's the key. Yeah.
Well, you said, you know, earlier that you don't know what your purpose is or something of that sort. And
My consciousness. Yeah. Why am I me? Yeah.
Why am I you? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's a very evolving question, because your sense of you, you know, it starts off as a child, there's no sense of personal self. You just, you know, are. And then the mind develops, and then the ego develops, not as a bad thing. It's simply a way of constructing a personal self. Without that, we'd be zombies. What's the point?
Then
it's a matter of integrating the personal ego with the divine self. And then your sense of me-ness starts to expand. You're no longer this me that's related to the body, related to roles that you play in life, but the meanness becomes more inclusive. So that meanness then extends to you, as we are relating to each other in this chat. It includes other people in our lives, and then it includes nature, then it includes other planets, then it includes non-physical realms, then it includes an entire universe, then it includes space beyond time. And so, you know, the meanness eventually includes primordial consciousness, beyond time, beyond space, beyond creation. Like Jesus said, I and the Father are one. That was spoken from that place of primordial union. But he also referred to himself as a man, as a son, as a whatever roles that he was playing, as a teacher, as a student. So, you know, we can include all of that. It's not about slicing ourselves into pieces.
It's still, you know, I'm totally aware of all that, but as I'm speaking to you from here right now, it is me speaking. It's not the universe speaking. It's not that. It's like me speaking. And I'm still trying to figure out why I am this me.
Okay, so that's where you can create a very subtle shift. Is it you speaking as Lilo? Or is it the universe speaking through Lilo? Mm-hmm. As Lilo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, we tend to create a separation between what we consider as me and the universe out there. But it's not so separate. You are the universe. As a, you know, as a human, you are still the universe, speaking and reflecting and expressing through the human personality.
I understand that, but how do you feel it? How can I at this moment know that I am all that? I mean, intellectually I understand it, but I want to know more than just intellectual.
I know, and I think that's the journey. And it, for me, it's about recognizing that I cannot, how should I say this? If my emotions are not the marker of how I feel about myself. So in other words, I could be feeling really crappy
mm-hmm.
and still be me.
Mm-hmm.
I could be feeling really connected, and that's also me. Because mm-hmm. a me is not just who I think I am or feel I am, it's all of it. So it doesn't matter what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what my mood is. That's all reflections of the personal self. And I then just witness that. Oh, okay. So now this is coming up. This is being expressed. But who is expressing it? That's divine consciousness.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm getting something for myself. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's also like Qigong practice when we do like the open and concentrate, no? Open, concentrate, then we really feel that we are really fat and there's no limitations, no boundaries. And then we come back to us, no? That's when I feel physically.
Mm.
Yeah, the expansion, the contraction. Mm. And don't expect that you'll always be expanded. And don't expect that expansion is better than contraction.
Mm.
Because that's what we kind of, you know, the mindset that we create. Oh, spirituality means we're always going to be expanded. Maybe it's about being contracted into real human embodiment. Because we forget that we're here to be embodied.
Yeah.
And what does embodiment mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're so focused on enlightenment as an upward movement, we forget about embodiment as the mm-hmm. descent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Use the word more like a sovereign, no? More than ego. When we talk about the one sovereign, it's important to be oneself as well, not only just oneness.
Ah, interesting. Yes.
Interesting conversation, yes.
You know, I find that there was a time I worked as a psychotherapist and worked with a lot of people who were deeply traumatized and who were diagnosed as multiple personalities. And it's really interesting to observe that. What happens is you're talking with someone and then suddenly they switch and another personality shows up, completely different. Different mm-hmm. roles, different identity, even different genders, different mm-hmm. ages, different aspects of consciousness. One could be, you know, in an adult functional, functional in the world, earning a living, mother, whatever, to her children. And then another personality comes up who's 2 years old as a male. His role is as a protector. Then another personality comes up who's been really traumatized, who's experiencing the pain of a five-year-old who is deeply abused, and so on. And each personality doesn't recognize that there's other personalities sharing the same form.
Wow.
So we, you know, maybe we're not wounded in that way, but we still have sub-personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Which are related to certain moods. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling in a certain mood, you feel contracted. If you're feeling in another mood, you're feeling expanded.
Mm-hmm.
But who is it who's feeling this or that? It's the same. Mm-hmm. You know, the mood isn't who you are. Mm-hmm. The personality isn't who you are. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I learned from working with these beautiful people who are fractured, that we also have that tendency to fracture ourselves and then mm-hmm. identify with one or the other of those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So then when we step out and become the witness, we begin to identify with the wholeness and mm-hmm. observe how that wholeness then fractures itself and begins to identify with this or that. But the witness doesn't change. And the witness is another aspect of our being, right? We could call it the higher self or the divine self or whatever. But even the witness is not really who we are. You know, then beyond that is just presence, irrespective of what you're feeling, thinking, experiencing. It's just the divine presence.
Yeah.
Without qualities.
At one point, I practiced hypnotherapy, transpersonal hypnotherapy, and some of my clients, they resolved their issues by going into other lives and reliving certain things. And I could even see the change in their facial expression when they were expressing that life. But what I also thought is possible that these, in order to resolve an issue, they could have tapped into somebody else's life in the collective unconscious. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily their own life, but they took an example from a life somebody else lived and applied it to their situation, and it helped them heal. I think that sometimes when people think they've been this or that in another life, it could be that they are just grabbing it out of the collective unconscious or Akashic records or whatever people call that. And that also expresses through them, even though they didn't live it directly themselves.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yes, I don't believe that, you know, a linear model of reality needs a linear time scale or timeline. So there's past lives or future lives or whatever. But if we experience ourselves simultaneously as presence, we can be present in that Akashic world, Akashic zone, and receive whatever we need and refer to it as life, as past lives, which is why many people could have the same past life. You know, many people experience being Joan of Arc, or many people experience being Mary Magdalene or whatever. You know, it's because it's in the collective. We're tapping into that archetypal zone. And then for that moment, it becomes ours. That's why channeling is such a, you know, it's a state of consciousness where you're attuning to the collective, to that Akashic realm. And so you're doing that through your writing. You're tapping into that. You don't need to refer to it as your past life, but it's simply a story that exists or will exist through you.
Yep.
Because you are the universe, and the universe is always creating and creating. That's creativity is the ground of the universe, of, you know, of consciousness itself. So so Jane Roberts talks about that in some of her books. I think the Oversoul 7 books and the Nature of Personal Reality and others. But you know, it's like, and at first it really bothered me. It's like, oh, how can, you know, so who am I then? Because I was still identified with the personal self and had the sense that, if I die, then this piece of me, this Kiara, will come back and recognize itself as Kiara. But that's not necessarily how it works. So when I die, or when someone close to me dies, I can still communicate with them, and there'll be an aspect of them that I can relate to as I knew them in this incarnation. But they are not necessarily just that. They're experiencing themselves as a different incarnation completely, not with the past life of having been in this incarnation, unless they're relating to me, if I communicate with them. So it's like, you know, that's the nature of consciousness. We are so fluid. And that's what I learned with the dolphins.
What I wanted to know. How was that?
So, well, that's the gift of the dolphins for me. It's like when I'm with them, and especially as a group, you know, because we usually go with a group of people, and over the days, swimming with them and then doing meditations, sharings together every evening, there's a dissolving of personal boundaries and personal ego. And then you start relating to the dolphins as they relate to you, which is just simply presence. They don't relate to us as dolphins. You know, we're still holding that human role, that human idea. But that starts to dissolve because in their presence, it just is just what happens. And that's why there's so much, you know, people experience so much joy, because joy is a sense of letting go of the personal self, the boundaries of separation. You simply become the universe, become the self expressing through this, you know, form that's identified as Lilo or Marg or Ayako, Kiara. So, yeah, so that was, so, you know, it's the highlight of my year.
I could be jealous.
I take people out every year. So next year I'll be going for 2 weeks in September, first and second weeks. So if you let me know.
Always in Egypt?
Pardon?
Always in Egypt?
Well, always in Egypt so far, because I have a friend who has a boat, and we just spend the week on the boat anchored in the very special coral reef where the dolphins have their home. But if there's other places, I'd love to swim with whales and with sharks and with, you know, other marine creatures, species of dolphins. It's like, you know, they are all part of consciousness expressing. You know, when people first hear sharks, it's like, oh my God, you know, because we have this image of sharks, which is based on fear. Movies like Jaws or whatever, you know, stories people make up. And sharks are not predators, they're scavengers. And they're very, very sensitive in their nervous system, in their senses. They smell fear. They smell aggression. And they mirror that. If they sense fear, they'll be curious. It's like, why is this, you know, because fear is a disruptive frequency. So is aggression. When people go in with that aggressive energy, they'll respond to that with curiosity, not with aggression necessarily, but with curiosity. And then that brings up more aggression, more fear for humans. And then it's like they switch into a different mode. They might take a bite to taste what this energy is about. But it's not, we are not their prey. They don't attack us to feed off us. If we go in with equanimity, even with love and with curiosity, then what happens is amazing. And I haven't experienced this directly. I've talked with people who have, and there's a woman, Anna Breitenbach, who is an animal communicator from South Africa. She has this wonderful YouTube video on that, what it means to be in relationship with sharks. So one of my dreams is to be, you know, with sharks. I wouldn't do this by myself at first. I'd want to go there with people who've had that experience to basically, you know, learn how to address that instinctive fear that comes up for all of us.
That would be wonderful. Yeah.
I met this man, I forget his name now. I'll think of it in a moment. I met him in Hawaii, and he was doing a course in animal communication. And he teaches people how to play with wild animals. With bears, with wolves, with tigers and lions, with, you know, animals who are wild. And the first thing is not to relate to them as prey or predator. You relate to them as playmates, which happens when you step into that curiosity.
Yeah.
So when you step into fear, okay, you're back into the predator-prey relationship or aggression. But when you become playful, that's why wild animals relate to children. You know, they become curious, and children become curious before they learn how to be afraid. Because fear is a learned response. Fear is not natural to us. So before children learn to be fearful, they simply are curious. And so what this man was teaching people is to step back into that curiosity and from that place relate. And it's not just animals, it's everyone, it's to humans as well. It's to the invisible realms, it's to nature spirits and fairies, it's to ascended masters and teachers. So it's all curiosity, and curiosity creates connection. And curiosity generates love.
Native Americans, North American Native Americans are teaching some things like that, and how to communicate and with animals. And I once had a very close encounter with a rattlesnake where I was totally vulnerable. And it was so amazing how we looked at each other, and we knew she wasn't afraid of me and I wasn't afraid of her. She just watched me. I was going up a steep incline on my hands and knees, and she didn't move one bit. And we watched each other, and I just passed by. And it is exactly what you're talking about. In that moment, I was not fearful, but I was very surprised to see her there.
Well, and then that becomes so when the Native American people talk about power animals, for instance, you know it's all animals, but from that place of power.
Yeah.
So then you are connecting with the power of the rattlesnake because you relate to it as a brother, as a sister, as a creature, as a relative, rather than, you know, the human separate role, which then leads to some kind of hierarchy, division based on fear and aggression. What I'm sharing, these look at the books I've shared online on the chat.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Great. It's, Tom Brown.
Yeah, you can download them. Mm-hmm. So these are all, it's a series of books by Tom Brown Jr., who was, he has a tracking school somewhere in the eastern coast. But his teacher was an Apache elder. Who had never lived in the reservations or a city or anywhere close to civilization. His people had managed to escape from the scourge of the white man. And so grandfather, as he's known by Tom, his name is Talking Wolf, teaches Tom about how to relate to nature, relate to the wilderness, and relate to the spirit that moves through all things. It's a beautiful set of books. And so if you would like to, you know, download and read those,
it's
an adventure.
Thank you so much.
Where do you find them?
Here, it's on the chat. So go into the chat.
I'm not on the chat at all. Okay. Let me get the chat.
Yeah, there's that.
Okay.
And then just click on each one and it'll download.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Oh, sure.
Yes, thank you.
It looks like a very old book, no? Oh, no, but 1993.
They are old. I mean, most of them I think it's maybe from the 60s and 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this has been a great teacher for me. People like Tom mm-hmm. Brown, people like Jane Roberts, people like Carlos Castaneda.
Yeah.
You know, they were a very particular type of people who were storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And their stories were the stories of life and creation.
Yeah.
Stories based on relationship with nature, with the earth, with grandmother earth or mother earth, you know, which is the way that the indigenous people related to life. We have forgotten that. And mm-hmm. these are reminders.
Oh, this is great.
Yes, sometimes, you know, some people say the native people have a special way to speak.
Mm.
And some intellectual people say they cannot follow their way of speaking because it's not like so logic, right? But I mean, I like it, no, because it's very experiential. So somehow the modern people forgot.
Mm. Yeah. it's the more mythical mind. So, you know, there's the logical mind and the mythical mind.
Mm-hmm.
Myth doesn't mean it's not real. It's more real, in fact, than the logical world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But real, that has to be grasped through other senses. You know, by expanding our senses, expanding our perceptions.
Mm.
And, you know, we have learned to condense our awareness, our perception of reality through these five senses. And even those five senses, we've narrowed them down to a very narrow range. And you asked about dolphins. You know, one thing about dolphins, their range is much greater than ours.
Mm.
So their sonar actually covers a range that is far beyond our ability to see or hear or feel. And that's why when they make those sounds, it enters into those invisible ranges,
mm-hmm.
and which is why it opens up our consciousness so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it frees up the mind, it frees up the senses,
mm-hmm.
it frees up those layers of conditioning, those traumas that we hold on to as our own identity. And then it's like, we recognize ourselves for who we are, not the role that we play.
So it's multi-dimensional frequency, no?
Multi-dimensional
kind of
exactly. So that's the same thing you're talking about, Ayako, and you relate the native people around the world. They are able to tune into that way of being, that way of seeing, which is mythical, which is the connection with the invisible realm, the archetypal realm, where the dream world.
You
know, the Aboriginals talk about dream time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where magic happens. This is where magic becomes a way of life.
I have been doing the channeling for people's dream recently. I asked them to tell me their dream, what was striking, like object or whatever the memory. Then I start to connect the guys, and then I just channel, and it's kind of very interesting.
Like
so many meanings. Well, you know, of course, I can say that I'm making up, but anyways, it's more like a deeper way to see the meaning of the dreams.
You know, one way to relate to a dream, you wake up from a dream, and then you take out your notebook. You don't move as much as possible. You stay in the same position to the extent you can, because then the recall is greater. As soon as you move your body, the dream starts to fragment. And then you start relating to each part of the dream as you. So if you're dreaming of, you know, walking in the wilderness and meeting a mountain lion, okay, so who is you? You are the mountain lion. You are the grass in that the mountain lion appears from. You are the Ayako that shows up in the dream. Every part of the dream is you. And then you have a dialogue between these different parts of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the mountain lion is attacking you, and in that dialogue you find that he's actually offering a gift. What is that gift? So you look for that. So the dream then takes on many layers. And then you realize that, okay, this is a night dream. The day dream is also a dream. So this life, if we experience it as a dream, who's the dreamer? So that's another, you know, gateway. Who's the dreamer? So just as in this life, I experience myself as separate from you, but in the mind of the dreamer, I and you are not separate from each other.
Mm, yeah.
Just like in our night dream, every aspect of the dream eventually returns to the dreamer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then the me is no longer this dream. The me includes the dreamer. The me is the dreamer. Mm-hmm. And then there's many different dimensions of being the dream and the dreamer. Eventually, all of creation is a dream in the mind of primordial consciousness. That's the dreamer. And that's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like a, you know, it's a way of discovery by entering into that mythical mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the dream time could be an access to that.
It's like resonance, no? When we resonate with something and it just appears, so it's like a striking to our eyes. Just jump in. Because otherwise, I'm not looking at those things.
Yeah.
I'm just absorbing everything that you're saying. It's very inspiring listening. I'm sorry I'm not really very talkative today, but I'm listening.
And now it's your turn to speak.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was just saying I'm taking it all in and it's going very deeply into my being right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the nature of presence, isn't it? That we just receiving from everything, and that receiving goes into the deep place of the heart.
Yeah.
Not through this level of mind, but the deeper level of mind.
Right.
Then it starts to transform something.
Yeah.
So since we were talking about a dream, I didn't have a dream, but this sentence was right there as I woke up, and it says, "Where love talks, sustenance walks." So remember that.
Mm.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Where love talks, sustenance walks.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay, so how would you... Okay, so pretend that now you're listening to someone else share that dream. How would you interpret that for them?
Well, I would interpret it when you are expressing love, you receive sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
Like something like that. Yeah, I don't know. But it was so strong, this sentence. It was pretty funny.
I love the poetry of that.
Yeah, I don't know who told me, but that's what I got.
So when love talks, or when love talks, sustenance walks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So the voice of love is very different from the voice of fear. And you mentioned the Course in Miracles. You know, the opposite is not love and hate, but love and fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So wherever there's fear, there's no room for love. Where there's love, there's no room for fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
And love sustains us then.
Yeah.
So wherever we walk, wherever we go, we know we're protected, we know we're safe, we know we're guided, we know there's nothing to fear, we know we're taken care of in every possible way, because then we are in the moment, and in the moment there's no fear.
Yeah.
The fear comes up when we get attached to stories. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to be okay?
Well, love is it for me anyway. At this point in my consciousness, I don't know anything better than love. You know?
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's all good.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, people make too much sentimentality out of love. Mm-hmm. And they relate it to, you know, it's like in the English language, you know, you can love ice cream, you can love.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, but that's not it.
Yeah. But love is to become, really. Yeah. You see something outside of you, seemingly, and then it's no longer outside of you because you're that.
Mm,
and then, you know, love is simply the relationship of becoming at one. It happens instinctively or intuitively. It's not something through this mind. But it's about opening the heart so that this level of mind can also expand to include that unity. Mm-hmm. You know, so when grandfather talks about the spirit that moves in all things, that's what love is. Then you're attuned to nature in the same way. You're attuned to the universe. You relate to each other. You see everything as a relative. So when Native American people would say, in greeting, we are all relatives. Mithakyasan. And which basically means, I see you as me. I see me as you. Namaste. The same thing.
Yeah.
The God in me recognizes the God in you.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. No, nice. I don't even like the word nice. It's super. No.
But we use it. Like should.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we have to invent a whole new language.
Yes. Well, maybe we will. Well,
yeah.
At least I got some inspiration about writing, so that's good.
Yeah, curious to see what comes.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
I'm here in the mountains for another week or so I'll have time to ponder on that. That's good.
Great. Sedona, where are you now? Are you in Sedona now?
No, I'm in the Sierra Nevadas, Mammoth Mountain.
Okay.
It's a ski resort. My husband skis, but I don't. I don't even like the snow. But I'm here.
Well, you've got other mountains to ski.
Yes.
Well, I'm feeling so much peace, energy here in my heart, here in this circle.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's very calming.
You know, it's for me, I don't often get to have conversations with people on this level. And I'm so grateful for this.
Really, really time.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
And the different connections on Earth, you know, we all are in very different areas, which I love. It's really nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we first started this, I had no idea that it would be a repeat. And, you know, I'm open to doing this more often.
That would be
and
nice.
Open to inviting other people.
Yeah.
And one thought is, you know, Ayoka, you're recording it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We could put this on YouTube or whatever.
Okay,
and that way, if people don't mind, make it available to
Yeah, I mean, I didn't make the YouTube last time and I gave it to you, so I can do it just open in public and then people just can see them. Particularly great. Editing something, but just the flow of the conversation. The invitation if some people want to join, maybe. I spoke to one lady on Clubhouse, and then she's from Egypt, and then she works here in Japan. And then because she was very into the Sufi, so I said, I know, Kiara just is going to Egypt. No, it was that time. And then, but today, this is like 4 o'clock in the morning. So I sent her the link this morning as well, but she's not coming. So maybe it's a time wave, but yeah. Mm. But I think
so. What I'll do is, send me the recording. Mm-hmm. I'll upload it to my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Wind Rider.
That'd be good.
And then I could also upload it. There's a channel called Conscious Awakening Network.
Mm.
And
that sounds good, putting things up
on that occasionally. Yeah. So if something, if I have permission for that and if it feels right for people and if it feels like it can inspire others, we could do that.
Yeah, because it's always nice to have such a chat, no?
It is.
Just share get inspired with each other. And I'm feeling so much peace now. It's so great.
yeah, that's why I love doing this.
Me too.
Hopeful for humanity.
There
are so many beautiful human beings on earth. I love them so much, really, really grateful for all of it.
Great.
Yeah.
Good. So when is our next meeting then? It's going to be the end of the year.
Oh, that's right.
What's today?
Today is
the 30th.
November 30th, where you are.
Like 31st is everybody's busy, no? So 30th or 29th, 30th? It's a family time.
30th, I'm totally flexible, so I'm good. Yeah.
What about Kiara?
I'm okay. So.
Yeah, I'm okay.
30th, maybe.
30th. Mm-hmm. 30th December.
12:30. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So for Ayako and me, that would be the 31st.
Yeah. To celebrate the end of the year.
Yeah.
Again at 11 a.m. I'm so happy because that's the perfect time for me because I live in this time zone.
Okay,
yeah, we are.
Me too.
And it's nice to be here.
Oh, good. Yeah. Usually I have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I'm staying up. I haven't slept yet. I'm staying up. But you miss this Zoom because otherwise I'm going to sleep.
It's 1:30 a.m. now.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so then let's end this for now.
Yep.
And we'll meet. So Ayako, would you send out the invite again for next time?
I will.
Okay.
It's gonna be for you.
And feel free to invite anyone you wish. That you feel is resonant.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you.
And thank you for Kiara.
Love. See you soon.
Okay, see you.
Much love.
Bye. Bye.